From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
Well, welcome everyone back to another episode of Lean Local. And this show is an interesting show, if I could say so myself, in that it's a program that really does what it says. And we lean local. And when you talk about everything going on politically, you know, especially now at the national level with you got to be left or you got to be right, we don't do either of those. We don't lean left. We don't lean right. We just, you know, we're nonpartisan. And with all that's going on in the world, and there's a lot going on, and I, you know, like all of us, have concerns about it, and I think that's being covered by a lot of people, and you can read about it and see it on TV, listen to it on the radio. But on this show here, while we care about what's going on state and national and worldwide, we spend our time here talking about the local issues, and that needs to happen more. There's some studies out there that there's been less and less attention being paid to the local communities, and newspapers are being bought up by bigger companies. Some smaller newspapers have gone out of business. Some of the radio stations that were a little bit more local have gone to these syndicated speakers, and that's all good and fine. And I think people should listen to that because it's important that we're engaged. But, you know, when I talked with Civic Media, I was like, look, I do a show in the morning with John Mino and the mayor. And, you know, that's a nice show. It's a happier show. And the ratings are great. But I wanted to do something that dug just a little bit deeper. And so this show that 1 o'clock on Sundays, we get into issues. And it's Green Bay. This is, you know, of course, I love this community. I grew up and spent plenty of time in politics here. And we have a great image. When you talk to people, you travel Green Bay. Oh, Green Bay, that's awesome. You know, Packers. Or people who even come to Green Bay, you know, that's great. You got, you know, the water, Bay Beach, and those are all good things. But, and I want to keep this show focused on Green Bay, but I want to talk about the great and some of the not so great. And I know pretty much about Green Bay, like I said, but there are people who are experts or people who are, it's the word I could use, more engaged in issues. And I asked Mandy to join me for this show today. Mandy, if you saw her, you would know her. She goes by the name Mandy, and she has been very, very involved in our community for an issue that challenges us. Alcoholism, recovery, drug addiction, recovery. And you've seen a lot for a young person. You've been working. I met you, what was it, a while ago? When you started, what, you started Dijon? Did you start?
Darjeun.
You started that. You opened that. Okay. Yes, I remember that. And you have worked that and a number of things. So with that said, I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit more about you, but kind of what is your story? And I'm glad you're here in Green Bay. I will start by saying that, and I'm going to end by saying that as well, but welcome. So tell me your story about how you had some challenges and you've not only overcome them, but you're giving back in a big way.
So basically, I was born very drug affected as a child. I grew up with a birth mother who was doing drugs, drinking too much. My aunt and uncle adopted me when I was 7. So I got a whole new life, lived in Wausau, grew up there. I had a lot of trauma growing up as a child from the past trauma. So I grew up with a very good family, owned a business in Wausau, grew up on the lake, you know.
That's a nice wholesome community too, right? Wausau? Oh, I mean.
Yeah, we were out on Lake Dubé. So it was like in between Wausau and Stevens Point.
Right.
My father took over our family business from my grandpa. My mom sort of did, you know, a lot of different things and then became a real estate agent in Wausau. So I grew up in a very good family once I got adopted, but I never worked with any of the past trauma of all the abuse as a child, and no amount of money or love that I'd gotten could help that I eventually started drinking very badly.
So you know, I just want to be clear. So you came into a great family at the age of seven,
mm-hmm.
but you were carrying some things from zero to seven.
Yep.
That weren't resolved. And wow, you sometimes would think that would be forgotten, clean slate. And that's not the case.
Nope. Wasn't the case in mine. Oh. I got in a lot of trouble. My parents, you know, were the typical parents that tried to love it, you know, with money, really. They tried to love it a lot with money, and they tried to help it that way and give me a life that I didn't have because I was adopted and I was so hurt as a child. And I still steered towards that bad route because there was a part of me that you can love me, love me, and love me, but I have to learn how to love myself.
Yeah.
And
right.
If I don't learn that, I'm going to continue to use and drink and do drugs.
So you turned to that. I just want to be clear on this. And I want to talk about early childhood development because I'm a big believer in that. My mm-hmm. oldest daughter works in that field at 0 to 3. And I mm-hmm. think people are like, nobody's going to remember anything. And here you are a testament that, wait a minute, that those are very, very critical years. But why, if you were in this family that loved you and I don't think they loved you through money at it, but you were, money wasn't an issue.
Nope.
But yet you made bad decisions.
Very bad decisions.
Okay, tell me more about, why?
Basically, it came down to I didn't have any respect for myself. I never had learned to love myself because there was so much that had happened to me as a child that I lived within that bad realm. And I perceived myself as what my family, my birth mother had done or my stepfather had done. And
wow.
I never learned the value of being able to love myself. I loved others. I loved my family.
Yeah.
I knew right from wrong, but I had been so traumatized as a child that there was a part of me that just still felt so icky. And back when I was a teenager, they didn't focus a lot on trauma. I'm 46 years old now, mm-hmm. and we focus way more on trauma now. But back then it was, go see a psychiatrist. Let's put you on meds. I didn't want to be on meds. I didn't want to be on ADHD meds. I didn't want any of these things. I just wanted to feel okay about myself. Mm-hmm. But you're not really taught back then how to tell people or tell your family, I don't feel okay about myself. And I think another huge aspect of this, which we're just coming out of Pride Month, is I knew that I liked the same sex. Mm-hmm. That was a very hard road for me. Being LGBT and in this community, when I was young, it wasn't as out there as it is now. It was very shadowed and very, and my dad owned a business, so don't come out about that, you know?
And statistically, there's a lot. I think it's better now, like you said, and I think there is the even at some there's just schools have more group meetings. Goodwill, they have some organizations that would focus have rooms. I've been to some of those meetings. I mean, that was a suicidal thing too, probably back when you were 12, 13, 14. I mean, that's. So I think that's a good thing. I mean, when you were talking about some things are better today, I want to get to that a little bit later. But I mean, but you struggled. So with the sexual identity that you were struggling with, some trauma that happened when you were a little kid, you know, less than 7 years old. Did you act out, or why did you turn to alcohol? Did you turn to weed? Did you run away? What happens? What happened?
I can't even tell you what didn't I do. I ran away. I got in fights. I stole. I joined a gang. It was kind of like a wannabe gang probably back then, but I drank. I sold shots of liquor out of my locker that I stole from my mom. Wow. I sold
weed. How old
weed.
were you in high school doing
that? I was around 12 when I started really kind of getting into more the alcohol scene. I also grew up on a lake where we didn't really have to be watched, so to speak. Yeah. We didn't have a lot of babysitters. Everyone got in their pontoon boats and went out to the lake bars. And our families had a lot of trust. It was different back then. You could leave your doors unlocked. You could let the kid let me run around on a lake with a paddle boat, you know? Everyone knew everybody. out where I was from, and alcohol was the kind of thing. I was right by Mosinee, Wisconsin. So that was the staple. It was alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. It was probably better for me to be an alcoholic than gay, even that young. Wow. So
you were, wow. So 12, 13, 14, you're, what, you're just eighth grade, freshman high school, and you were... as a parent, you were a troubled kid, and as an individual, you were an anxious kid, I would guess. So what happened? Did you, do you mind telling me? I don't know you that well. I know you more from your business, and you know, I met you when I, you know, obviously was mayor, and I didn't know this about you, but you've come to be such a good, strong community leader, and I'm assuming a lot of this has to do with who you are today. So what happened? Here you are, ninth grade, 10th?
I got in a lot of trouble. My family sent me to a boarding school in Northern California, hoping that that trouble would go away. So it didn't.
They did have a little money, though, I mean, to do
I
that.
I played softball.
Okay.
Honestly, sports was like the one thing that really helped me. I grew up with my mother running a water ski show. She ran a windsurf shop. So because of all that, I had all these sports. I was also a popular kid in school. So a lot of this was undercover. You know, like, my mom knew I had issues, but, you know, it was kind of hidden in our family because I was popular. I played softball. We had all the kegger parties at my house. My brother was not so happy about the kegger parties because he lived next door. But I went to a boarding school, and I reformed my life, but I came home, and then my brother had passed away. My cousin, but he was my brother. And my grandmother, who was my whole world, passed away. Kind of all in, like...
So you came back to more trauma.
Year span, yeah.
Ugh. All right. Hey, I we're going to go to a quick break, but talk a little bit more about the trauma, but then I want to know how you turned the corner, and I got to believe it was your decision, but there had to be some help out there, and we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to get on to what you're doing here in our community. We are here with Mandy, someone who has lived a difficult life, but, I mean, here you are giving back a great deal to a whole lot of people in Greater Green Bay, and we sure appreciate all you do. We're going to be right back with Mandy to talk a little bit more about her challenge, some of her personal challenges, but challenges we have in the community. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
I walk to the sound of my own drum.
With Jim Schmidt, and we are, as much as we all love our community and all the great things going on today, we're talking with a very special guest, Mandy, who struggled as a kid with alcohol, with drugs, with sexual identity, and she's talking us through those challenges, and we're going to get, believe me, this story ends very well, because she has a place here in Green Bay, a couple places that help people. But before we get to that point, I still want to follow you as a little kid. So you, 9, 10, 11, got into some trouble. Your parents, who had the resources, are like, you know what? We're sending you to California to a boarding school. And that happens. And you went out there. And was life good being away from everything?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I missed my parents. It took me a year to stop being mad at them for sending me there. Mm-hmm. But I loved it out there. I mean.
All right. And, well, how can you not love Southern California? And you came back, and you got trauma again. Your brother died, your grandma died, yeah. And that set you back, or could you deal with it?
I think the harder part was I had really no purpose. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with myself when I grew up, you know? So I worked for my family business. And I wasn't so happy in that family business. And my brother was gay, so... My brother had passed away of AIDS. So it was a very, don't speak about it even back then. And my mother was struggling through that. And so I was scared to come out of the closet because my brother had passed of AIDS and was gay. So I found a gay bar underage in Wausau. And that was where majority of my problems started, was finding this gay bar in Wausau. And it was my way to like get away from all the pain. And it was a way from, you know, getting out to be independent, but being who I finally was and being able to forget that I was hurt as a kid, or forget that my brother had passed and my mom was struggling. And I dove into that gay bar and I made it my life.
Okay, as someone who doesn't really know you that well, just doing this interview, it sounds like that would have been a good thing, that you were in an environment where you could be accepted.
Yes, but, and I just spoke about this today when I spoke at the 218 Club, but the problem is for a lot of LGBT community, there isn't enough out there. Back when I came out of the closet, all we had was bars. That's, you couldn't go to Walmart and meet a girl. You couldn't go to a park and meet a girl. It was still too taboo. Mm-hmm. And so all we had was the bars. And with the bars comes drinking, comes drugs, comes the nightlife. You know, you learn that. So if you're going to be accepted into a community, now we've got alcohol around. Now today, there's a lot more things out there. But when I was growing up, there weren't. And so...
The reason I don't... And if I'm digging too deep, just say, hey, look,
I've had it. Oh, you're fine.
But... Because I think there may be some people listening that are seeing some of these signs. And so you say, gee, these gay bars are great. They're in an environment where they're accepted. But you're saying that you got into that environment, yet there were things there that weren't good for you. And you drank more than you should have and got into drugs more than you should have. And what happened?
Well, you know, typically when you're at a bar, you drive home. And I very quickly caught my first... OWI. And after that, it just spiraled out of control as I grew up as an adult. I had it in my mind that I was going to be a bar owner. Honestly, why I moved to Green Bay, there were not enough gay people in Wausau. There was one bar. When I moved to Green Bay years and years ago now, there were four gay bars and excess. And we, you know, that was the life. Like Green Bay per capita had more gay bars when I moved here than any other city.
What year was that?
Let's see. 2004, I believe. Okay. A long time ago.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I was elected in 2003. I'm a little bit surprised to hear you say that, only because in 2003, 2004, one of the criticisms I had as mayor was that we weren't as accepting to the gay community. And yet you moved here from Wausau because there was more acceptance.
Well, yeah, it was more accepted than Wausau. I mean,
yeah.
Or Stevens Point. Like, we had one coffee shop in Stevens Point, and we had one gay bar in Wausau.
So, all right. So now you're in an environment where there's, what'd you say, four or five gay bars, and you've got more places. You don't have to just go to this one place in Wausau. So, again, more opportunity to meet people of your same sex. But that didn't get rid of the alcohol or what?
No. Green Bay was where I spiraled. I feel like as much as I felt it was more accepting being gay in Green Bay, there was also more opportunity for alcohol and getting in trouble in Green Bay. There was a lot more to do than in Wausau, a lot more bars. And once you get set in a routine, it's hard to break a routine. Mm-hmm. And so my routine became bars, 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 bars. It became such a routine that I convinced my father to allow me to sell my stock in the family business to buy a bar in Green Bay.
Wow.
It was a really bad idea.
I wouldn't have given that advice, but
it was a really bad idea.
When I'm thinking you were probably a little tenacious too with your dad. So he signed off on it.
Yeah.
And you bought a bar.
Yeah.
An alcohol bar.
Yeah.
Wow. And, yeah, I would think that's the fox in the hen house, but I don't know. I didn't know you back then.
No, it was the old Camelot building.
Oh, yeah.
The one I turned Darjeune Cafe into once I got clean.
All right. I want to talk about that transition because I think that was pretty cool, and I remember that. So you bought the old Camelot building, and it was a bar, and so you had access to some of these vices that you really probably should have been managing better.
Yeah. I mean, now I didn't have to like worry about making money because I was buying all the, you know, alcohol as a bar owner. So it was pretty much like in my mindset, I'm drinking for free. Really, I wasn't. I was probably drinking more of my profit than I should have been. But I had that availability more.
Okay. As I told our listeners before, this has a happy ending to it, but it doesn't feel like it.
No, it
does. So you bought this bar and you were drinking the profits. But the bar was semi-successful?
It was pretty successful. Yeah, I mean, the police weren't always very happy with me, but the bar was pretty successful.
All right.
And we were on Broadway.
Right. Okay. So tell me what happened that, did you hit rock bottom? I mean, they say that all the time. Or did you just come to a realization, did a mentor come into your life? Or what happened? How?
I got 4 DUIs, OWIs in Brown County. I had had 1 in Marathon County when I was younger, and then I racked up 4 OWIs in a matter of, I think, 5 years here in this county.
Okay, we're going to go to break pretty soon. Did you do time?
There's a story behind that. I've done time for a few of them, yes.
Oh, man.
But there's a story behind
all right. the fifth. I got to get to the good stuff, all the good things you're doing. Stuff. Okay, I want to turn around. Man. I want to get to the... All right, we're going to talk about how you turned the corner and then started giving back through... a number of things. You've helped some friends of mine too, which I think is, I want to get to that as well. But, thanks for sharing that first half of what kind of got you to the point where you turned the corner, but where I want to just finish, you know, what really made you turn the corner. 4 OUI or OWIs would
5.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. We're going to be right back. This is, I'm with Mandy here, Jim Schmidt, Lean Local.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor, Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome everyone to the second half now of Lean Local. Today's a special guest with a challenging issue. We're talking about, started the program with how great Green Bay is, and it is great, and I think it always will be. But with that, there's some challenges. And Mandy is a resident here, actually an entrepreneur, business owner, who shared with us a little bit her growing up in Wausau and some of the struggles she had with some, I guess, not so great parents, and then adopted by or taken in by relatives who were great, tried to be great parents, and yet because of some of the trauma she was suffering in really 0 to 7, and some other things, some other struggles, both personally and externally, that she anyway moved to Green Bay and gotten a little bit. You bought a business, sold the family stock, bought the business, and. That coupled with, with 5 DUIs, which is a lot. I think I know one guy that got 7. That's got to be close to rock bottom.
Oh, yeah, that was rock bottom. Right. I didn't think so at the time, but yes, that was rock bottom.
So what happened? You're sitting on 5 DUIs with a business and...
I had a lot of other charges that went along with it.
Probably some debt.
No debt.
Well, that's right.
I was always very good with paying my taxes and making sure the money, you know, but I had some other charges that went with it. I was looking at prison. My mother stopped enabling me. She told me it's time to deal with your past trauma and your issues. And she went and talked to, you know, she spoke with a judge, very renowned judge here in this county. And basically that judge is a big reason that I am clean and sober today. But my mother sent me to treatment for a year in Florida. And that treatment center really helped me. They did a lot of peer support. They did a lot of things different. It wasn't your typical, this is how your brain operates on drugs. They focused on peer support, building purpose, gratitude, integrity. Who do you want to be? Who are you? Let's re-raise you. Stuff like that.
Oh.
And basically, I came home for sentencing and I still was looking at prison. Regardless of spending that year in treatment that Judge Warpinski sent me to, I was pretty much Judge Warpinski's last sentencing while he was on bench. So I came home for a court case. I wasn't supposed to have a sentencing for another 2 months. He said, listen, I'm getting off bench. We're going to finalize this today. I freaked out about it.
Yeah.
My mother, he said, we still have to send you to prison. I didn't know what to do. Called the treatment center owners and said, what do I do? They said, you're going to go in front of George Warpinski. You're going to tell the truth. You're going to say, I did this. You're going to say, I'm sorry. You're going to apologize. You caused havoc on this county. And we're going to sit at the treatment center here and we're going to pray. And you're going to learn to finally pray. And you're going to learn selflessness. And you're going to go do this. Or you never know what's going to happen if you do. And I was like, well, this is kind of a crazy idea, but okay, I'll just go tell Judge Warpinski all my deep, dark secrets. And I did. And I trusted the people that helped save my life. And Judge Warpinski kind of stopped and said, I kind of have one gift I have to give out. I haven't done this as a judge, you know, in my term. I've given a few out. But he said, I've seen more change in you. He was my judge through all four DUIs. And he said, I'm not sending you to prison. I don't think that you belong there and you need to get back to Florida, get on an airplane, get on probation pronto. I'm not giving you a license. Get back to Florida, do good there. Don't come back to my county. I don't want you back here. And that's, and I thought he was tricking. So I ran. I mean, man, I ran. I was like, are you kidding me? Like I was still facing almost, you know, 18 months to 3 years. And, I went back to Florida. Was going to be a counselor, starting an LGBT division for Ocean Breeze Recovery. Everything was going great. My probation wouldn't transfer. 4 days shy of my 1 year, and I got forced to come home. There was a new judge that took the seat, another honorable judge, Judge Walsh, who's awesome. And I came home with a HSED, no college degree, nothing, to a house that I drank in, hadn't even cleaned up yet, with a bicycle with no license. And a bar that I couldn't reopen and I didn't know what to do. And I was freaking out because my whole recovery support system was there. And
In Florida.
And
you're back here.
Everybody was
there. You had to come back here because it was a probation order.
Yep.
All right. So you came back here kind of scared.
I was really scared.
Right. Right. I mean, you didn't have anything.
I was more scared of disappointing my family and Judge Warpin. Like I was so scared.
No, that's good. That's a good scared though. I mean, that's all right.
Yep.
So, well, let's hear it. What'd you do? I mean, again, there's a happy ending to the story. You turned out, so you're back
My
here.
Dad bought me a bicycle with a battery in it.
Nice.
And he bought me a gas-powered bicycle for in the winter. And one, and he said, you're just going to have to put up with it. And my mom said, help me find a school that I didn't have to take an Accuplacer because I have ADHD. And we found a school. And she said, my dad made me a bet. This is how this works. My dad makes me a bet that I can't finish school in under 2 years with a 3.8 GPA. And so we found University of Phoenix at the time. I could take accelerated classes. Yep. My dad's like, you can't drive anywhere. You might as well stay home and go to school with your dog.
Right.
And I went to school and I graduated in a year and 3 months with a 3.99 GPA. And basically the Darjeun was my homework assignment for school.
So what you did was you had a bar that was, I guess people would call it a regular bar, alcohol. It failed. It closed. You, because of your dad, gave you a challenge. You went to school, got like very close to a 4.0 and did a case study on converting Camelot to Darjeun.
We had a choice. We could choose a nonprofit to work with or develop our own. So I decided to spend the 4 months remainder to develop my own, and I wanted to develop a community center that was multiple pathways of recovery that wasn't just, you know, the same old everything anonymous, that we could have peer support, we could have all these things, and it could stay open 24 hours like I had in Florida. I mean, in a way, it was a little selfish. Like, I needed a recovery community that I had, I had in Florida.
Yeah.
And so I had had renters in the bar. They had vacated the bar, left it atrocious, and all I had was a bicycle and a puppy that just had surgery. So my sponsor in Florida said, I think that you need to pay an amends to Brown County, and we haven't discussed that yet, and you need to honor Judge Warpinski and the fact that he really let you out of that courtroom. and I think you need to open that homework assignment. With no money, I was like, are you kidding? So I had some support from some moms in this community and some really good friends, and actually a bar owner that was right across the street, Lori Koopman, and a couple of the other bars really supported it. And you, I came to you with this idea. If you remember, it was like a watercolor picture. And I said, Mayor Schmidt, I'm going to change. I don't even know you. I go, I'm going to change this whole Broadway area. We're going to have lots of this and this. And you kind of looked at me, but you gave me my first donation to open Arjun, which is kind of cool. And you just kind of looked at me like, I was a little rough around the edges back then. Still, I think I was wearing backwards baseball hats, baggy pants, and I rode a bicycle right to your mayor's office. Oh. Told you I didn't have a license.
But you were going to change a bar that was a little bit of a problem in the city into a support for different, for people, for with everything, challenges with alcohol, maybe sexual identity.
Mental health.
And they were going to be able to come there and yeah, that's something that any mayor would support. And I don't remember giving you a donation. I'm glad I did. And
you did. You even came to the grand opening.
Yeah, that I do remember. And that's great. So that was a turning point. You had a lot of people that helped you. You don't just have one person. You know, you had your parents. You had the judge, obviously. You had that support mechanism in Florida. Yep. It took a lot to get through to you.
Anyway, I was really defiant. I was very difficult to work with.
I had sense in that.
You know, I was that person. I was right. Trying to go to prison, not treatment.
Right. But so you did that and you opened up the Darshun and that has, you've had some people there that you've helped some people, and we're going to get to that. I want to get to that after this break. The people that were going there, what were their needs? I mean, you needed to surround yourself with helping people. I mean, that's who you are. What people who came to your establishment, what were they looking for?
Well, the biggest thing they were looking for was to withdraw off drugs, opiates. It was a hard thing. We didn't have detox. We had nothing. And I think they were looking for community and support. And we had a very open door, love you till you can love yourself policy at that cafe. And it was like, you know, fun. And we all got to hang out. We got to meet new friends. And a lot of things in this county started, like HA started there. And CA, Heroin Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Crystal Meth Anonymous started there. And I think they were just looking for kinship, like right. Support, like people to just of their own people to say, hey, here's my tribe. And like, here's my people. And like, we can all be like a community. And a lot of people just really needed to withdraw off drugs and just needed a place to chill on a couch where they didn't get judged.
And I think what I like about HA and of course AA is it isn't, you don't take anything. It's not like drugs or eat this or drink this or take. It is just an internal belief system that it's hard, but boy, a lot of people can go through it. I mean, HA is a big thing now in Green Bay. I've gone to some of those meetings. Yeah. Well, and that started over at your place, and it's, I mean, they have them at Mana now and a couple other places. So, wow, that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. It started there. Eric had come and said, hey, I'm going to start this meeting. And I thought it was pretty cool. And that was, 9 years ago now, you know, that Eric had started HA in our community, and it just spiraled through our whole state.
Yeah. It's really cool to see people that, and it's a daily struggle, right? I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, but I think what you're giving some people, not all, but some people, you're accepting them from people still struggle a little bit with their sexual identity. So you're giving them that. And I mean, that's, I'm not saying we're past that, but that's a little bit better than it used to be, right? Is it? Yes? No?
Don't you? I think so. I mean, we don't have that cafe any longer, but back when we had it, like we had a lot of support programs, like Humana had brought in a program. We had another program from UWGB that would come there and meet there. You know, we had some open mic nights and everyone was accepted. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that, and the offspring of that, I think, is a more accepting community. I'd like to think that. And also, the offspring of some of that is these HA meetings, this Heroin Anonymous, which I didn't think was that big of a problem in Green Bay until I was mayor. It was a bigger problem than I thought. But alcohol still overrides it, doesn't it? Isn't that still the biggest? Or I don't know.
I don't know. I think, you know, all drugs are a problem if you're somebody that needs to be in recovery from them. I don't think it's one or the other. You know, like I chose alcohol because my birth mom was a heroin addict. Had I went a different route, if I wasn't born drug affected, I might have chosen opiates and heroin. But that's just what was accept, you know, accessible to me. Had I lived with my birth mom my whole life, I probably would have chosen heroin.
Yeah. Do you think the resources are here in our community? I mean, you obviously started it. There's some spinoffs from your business. If someone is struggling, do you think Green Bay is there yet? And I want to talk more about you individually, but I'm talking about more of society. Do we have an infrastructure to help people who are struggling?
How honest do you want me to be? No.
You got to be honest here. That's part of the deal.
Well,
I can go to a break and let you think about it.
Oh, no, I don't need to think about
it. Okay, all right.
I was wondering about this question all day. Knew it was coming. I think there are very good resources in our county. I do. But I think that peer support is very valuable. And we need to focus a lot on that. And I think there's something to be said about the grassroots movement and why we have grassroots. And I think that it's not funded enough. And I wish there was more grassroots in our community, more support for those community centers, those dry bars, as we call them, more support for withdrawal management, for peers to be leading that, more support for, I think more peers need to be leading in the treatment industry too. I mean,
peer to peer.
I mean, the treatment center I went to, everybody was in recovery that worked there.
That's peer-to-peer.
Yep.
All right. I want to get back to that, and I want to talk about a few people that I know that you know that you helped. And we're going to get back to that. We're going to be right back. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. We go. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, here we go. Feel it in my soul. Really need it so good. Gotta feed it. How does it control? Really need it. Need it. Hey, here we go. Jim Schmidt with Lean Local, a show where we talk about what's going on here in our community, here in Greater Green Bay. And a lot of good things going on, some challenges. And today we've been talking with Mandy, who just struggled as a kid, teenager. If you've been listening this whole hour, really, you've lived a lot of us would think a very tough life. But again, we're at the happy ending. You got help from a lot of people. It's some people that I talked to, it's, you know, one person changed my life. It was a network of your parents, a judge that had a lot of empathy for the struggles you've had, and a recovery system down in Florida that continued to support you even after, and you probably spent a little money down there. But even when you came back up, they're like, look, we're with you. And, so today, this is your life, helping people.
Yep.
And tell me what you're doing. You got something on Dan's and some sober?
So we have three sober homes. We have two women's and one male home. We also were providing peer support and stuff through the hospitals alongside Bell and Health. Also, we just acquired the Dan's Avenue building that Diversions used to be in. And there was a reason that I really wanted that building. It was special to me because of Mitchell Rank.
So Mitchell Rank is a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
If I could just say, and then I want you to talk a little bit about him. Sandra Rank is a realtor here in town who I've known for years. When I ran for office, she was one of those people that support, and not just financially, but they drop literature, and Mitchell would come all the time and knock on doors and hand out literature. And I remember just saying to him, because he was just this nice kid, good looking kid, had a great personality, that, you know, you're probably going to be mayor someday. And he came from a very good family and ended up just DOD'd, right? I mean, yep. What happened? Was it fentanyl that did him in, or just?
Yeah, it was fentanyl.
Yeah. So which shocked everybody. The funeral was just packed. I know you spoke at that. So this place on Dan's, you're honoring him through, did you name that then?
Yeah, every one of our homes is named after somebody that's passed on from this disease. Mitchell just happens to be very special to me because we were pretty tight. We were pretty close, and I was trying to help him along the way, and I had known his I'd met Sandra and the family because of Mitch, and Mitch was at that building for a while, and he used to say, it really needs to be something of love. He really liked that old building, but he didn't, like, he thought it could be something amazing, and we talked a lot about what would a treatment center look like if I were to bring an ocean breeze here, like the one I went to, and we spent a lot of time talking about that before Mitchell had passed away, and the opportunity presented itself that we'd acquired the building with another building in Suamico. And I said, you know, I think we're going to have to do something what Mitch wanted. And the biggest thing we need right now is, like, had Mitchell, and I will say this all the time, had Mitchell been able to go somewhere to just withdraw off of opiates, to kick heroin, to kick fentanyl, if he could have just withdrawn for longer than 3 to 5 days, you need a good 14 at least 14 to 18 days. You're coming off this stuff. Your head's a mess. If he had a place to just chill, be loved, you know, get some good food, some nutrition, meditation, do some holistic care, not be forced to get up constantly and go to group, and to actually, like, take that time to make up his own mind during that withdrawal that this is not the life he wanted to live, I don't know if it could have changed it, you know, because right now, these guys need long-term withdrawal care from fentanyl and opiates. It is so hard to get off of it. And that is the main problem, is we need to have these guys in withdrawal care.
And how are we, are there withdrawal care facilities here in Brown County?
No. That's okay. What we're trying to open.
And, okay, why not? I mean, it's a problem. I was reading some numbers, you know, getting ready for this interview, and, you know, people die. And I think the people, when we report the deaths from fentanyl, I think maybe people don't want that reported. And they don't want my kid died of fentanyl or my, you know, and maybe it's not, maybe it's underreported. I don't know that, but I just, you know, but then I can tell you nationally, it's crazy. The numbers, when they say nationally, 200 people a day die from opiate fentanyl overdose. Do you realize if we had a plane crash 2 days in a row of 200 people, we'd shut down the airline industry. And yet this happens. Now this is nationally, I want to drill down. Everything comes from somewhere, right? So, I mean, Brown County is contributing to that number. And why do you think it's not getting the attention, the focus, the spotlight that it needs? I mean, this is terrible, and it's young people.
So as much money as we have a lot more funding now for this opioid thing, but it needs to go to the right places. It needs to go to the grassroots, in my opinion. But here's the problem. If you look at COVID, and when they claimed that an epidemic, right? Yeah. They had tents everywhere. And my main mentor, Laura Hube, who is senior VP of Bellin, I said to her during the COVID thing, what happens? And she said, everything's thrown out the window. You know, everybody helps people. And we were getting ready to put, you know, beds in hallways there if it, you know, times got worse.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to her one day, I said, you know what, Laura, this makes no sense because fentanyl is an epidemic. This is an epidemic. So why are we not triaging? Why are we not putting tents up and triaging this problem? Because we're losing our youth. We're right. Losing the new generation. And she said, I don't know, Mandy. And I said, here's the problem. You know how much more money it would cost to do that? Because we have so many people hooked on fentanyl. And I've always said, this is an epidemic. It needs to start being treated like an epidemic. The funding needs to come down to the grassroots. And we need to start withdrawing these guys.
All right. What can people do? Is it, do you go to the county? Is that the one that would be the vehicle to help with the funding, or their state legislator? I mean, but we got to talk about it. Let's start there, right? You're on the show. You're talking about it. It's an epidemic. Anyway, we can support you. Any website you want to give us, or?
If you go to Darjeune Foundation, Darjeune Foundation, there's a give butter donation thing that's on there. We're trying to raise money. We always said, we could raise $800,000, we wouldn't have to charge anyone to come into our center for withdrawal care for a whole year.
All right. We're going to work on that. Mandy, thank you for being here. We got work to do here, but the only way you can get it done is to talk about it in the beginning. We're doing that right now, and I appreciate what you're doing for this community. All right. This has been Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Sunday at 1 o'clock, WGBW 97.9. We'll see you next week.